This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Powered by U Mobile, 5G now with you.
Good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. The OG of quick service restaurants isn't McDonald's or KFC. It's their American peer, A&W, which opened its first restaurant 20 years before the Golden Arches. It's one of the few QSR brands that has survived to see its 100th anniversary. Can A&W's recipe for longevity shepherd it through a second century amid an ever-changing F&B landscape of constantly shifting consumer tastes, rising costs, and new competitors? Today, I'm speaking to Kevin Basner, Global CEO of A&W Restaurants, for an update on the iconic American restaurant chain and their worldwide expansion. Welcome back, Kevin.
Well, good morning. It's very nice to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, A&W Restaurants was a pioneer in the franchising industry at its inception. And today, you're one of the few brands that is 100% owned by franchisees. That's the road less taken in the industry, often seen as more trouble than it's worth. How has A&W managed to make this arrangement work?
Yes, very unique in the industry for a franchise company to be owned by franchisees. But really what happened was about 11 years ago, the owners of A&W at the time put the business up for sale. And we had two groups of franchisees that came together and wanted to buy the business to protect their best interest over the long term. And it's really quite an interesting model in that when we get together with our franchise partners in the leadership, everyone has the same goal in mind. Mm-hmm. Everyone, because of the ownership structure, everyone is focused on moving the business forward. And what we have adopted as our one-team philosophy, and that's all stakeholders working together for a common goal. Oftentimes, franchisor and franchisee, there's a bit of friction because the interests don't necessarily directly align. Hmm. And in our case, they do directly align because of the ownership structure that we have. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be a little bit more cumbersome to get everyone aligned and on the same page, if you may. But overall, over 11 years, it has worked out quite well for us. In fact, we have consistently outperformed the industry in terms of results.
So who are the main shareholders of the franchise at the moment? It was purchased back in 2011 by the U.S. National A&W Franchisee Association and the owner of the Indonesian franchise.
That's correct.
Does that same ownership structure hold today?
That's correct. It's the same ownership structure. It has not changed, and it continues as it was during the acquisition.
All right. Mm-hmm. When you're looking for franchise partners, is there a difference in who you look for between the U.S. and other parts of the world? You know, because I see that in the U.S., for example, you're working with individual restaurant franchisees, whereas in countries like Indonesia and Malaysia, you'll have a single major entity as the sole franchisee. You know, how do you approach these two?
Yeah, that's correct. Our business in the U.S., majority of our operations in the U.S. are single unit operators. Now, that has started to change over the last 5 or 6 years, where we're getting more multi-unit operators. But multi-unit operators in the U.S. for us are 3 and 5 unit operations. Here in Malaysia and in international markets, because of some of the challenges with supply chain and management, we like to keep that more local, so we do more area development. So territory development, like here in Malaysia, we have one shareholder that has Peninsular Malaysia and now East Malaysia and Brunei. They've recently secured the rights to develop that. So typically, internationally, we look for larger, better capitalized groups to get to economies of scale.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the Malaysian franchise, it seems like it's quite unique in that 49% of A&W restaurants are owned by Intermark, 51% is owned by Pan Malaysia. So how do you navigate the relationship with two partners in a franchisee? I mean, technically, there are three of you in the marriage.
Yes. Well, the partnership between Intermark and Pan Malaysia is really on paper, if you may, Intermark and Zhurjiang are really the operators of the business. So Pan Malaysia is more of a investor, capital investment, really more in the background, if you may.
So they're a silent partner.
They're more of a silent partner. So it's really Intermark that we interact with mm-hmm. on a regular basis. And Zhurjiang and his team are really the ones that we deal with as the franchisor. That doesn't mean we don't have a relationship with Pan Malaysia. We do. But the day-to-day business and the operations of the business is really in the hands of Intermark by okay. the arrangement between Intermark and Pan Pacific.
So in that sense, Malaysia, it's yeah. quite clear how the structure is and how the instructions come down from franchisor to franchisee.
Yeah, it's very clearly laid out in an agreement between Pan Malaysia and Intermark, mm-hmm. that Intermark is really the operating partner of the two.
Okay. Let's take a look at how the brand has fared over the past year, especially since our last conversation in June. What has been the sales performance worldwide in a year that's been marked by persistent inflation? Are consumers spending less at A&W?
A little bit, actually. A little bit. Although, in the U.S., we had record years, surprisingly, in 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. We had record years in each of those 2 years. Once the pandemic, once people came to terms with the pandemic, that it was going to be around for a while, and after about 7-8 weeks of cooking at home, everyone got tired and started going out. Mm. Well, we did very well because of our drive-throughs and our drive-ins, carry-out business, but it was really the drive-throughs in that people wanted to just get out of the house to do something. Mm. So they would come through the drive-thru, they would get their food, and they would sit in the parking lot and eat.
Right.
That was their going out, right? And of course the competition was much less.
Okay.
With casual dining and that were much less. So we actually had record years in 20 and 21. And 2022, things really were essentially flat in the U.S.
Flat?
Flat.
So it didn't go down?
Did not go down.
It stayed at 2021 levels?
It stayed at 2021 levels.
Okay.
And as compared to 2019, and we still look at the business as compared to 2019. That was the last stable year. Mm. And our business overall in the U.S. is up just over 20% versus 2019.
Okay.
Now, here in Southeast Asia, in Malaysia, quite a bit different. Mm. Our locations are very much different, a lot of shopping malls, a lot of airports, right? And so business really in 2020 and 2021 really, really suffered. Mm. However, happy to say that in 2022, business came back very, very strong. So, for example, here in Malaysia in 2022, we had a record year by all measurements, the strongest year A&W Malaysia has had since its inception.
Mm.
It was in 2022.
Okay.
So
we're going to get more into that. Sticking to the global picture, mm-hmm. though, I mean, you were reported by Reuters as saying that the cost of goods rose by 20% in 2022. What
Correct.
Did that do to your average margins? I think previously it was between 50 and 55%. Was that affected by the rise in cost of goods?
There's no question about it. There was margin compression in 2022 without a doubt. Cost of goods were up over 20% in 2022, and you can only take so much price before the consumer resists. So industry in 2021 and 2022, the industry in the U.S. took somewhere in the, between 7 and 9% price increases each year in the last 2 years. 2023, things have begun to stabilize. Now, cost of goods we are forecasting for the year to be essentially flat, but at elevated levels, right?
Mm.
So at elevated levels to 2022, not coming down. We see some decrease maybe later in the year, but for the most part, we look at the year as being essentially flat, which is a good start, right? Mm-hmm. Things stop going up. But there, no question there's been compression on margins.
Okay. And how much did you have to increase prices to reduce margin compression? And was this uniform across all markets in the terms of how you raise prices?
Well, it's not necessarily uniform in that in the franchise model, we cannot, certainly in the U.S., we cannot dictate pricing. We can suggest pricing. Mm-hmm. So it's really up to the individual operators in their store as to whether what price they take. But essentially what we did in 2022, which was the worst of the margin compression, was we took smaller price increases. We took price increases four times last year, essentially 2.5% each time. So we got to the end of the year where, you know, the price increases were really more in the 9% range overall. That we saw.
Are you expecting to increase prices further this year, or
we think we've stabilized coming into the year because the cost of goods has stabilized. We take normal price increases, which generally is 2-3% in the course of a year. Mm. Now, with that, it's going to take several years to get caught up with the margins. But some of the other things that we're doing in the U.S. and we're doing here as well is really menu engineering. Right, and the way best way to do that is through the menu boards, and through the promotions, and really promoting items that really two tier. One is promoting items that are unique to A&W and that have good margins overall, mm-hmm. right? And promoting them and featuring them on the menu boards. And then the other thing is having the balance with a lower cost, more affordable strategy, if you may. So, for example, here in Malaysia, Menurama, right? A bit controversial, I think, because what can you put forward to the consumer for 5 ringgit, mm-hmm. right? But we are participating in that, and certainly sensitive to that price value minded consumer, but. You know, for 11 years now since we acquired the business, our strategy here has really been that quality and uniqueness of our product was really our long-term value strategy.
We're going to get more into that. I'm speaking to Kevin Basner, Global CEO of A&W Restaurants on The Breakfast Grill. We'll continue this conversation after a short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile. 5G now with you.
If you've just joined us, I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. With me in studio today is Kevin Basner, Global CEO of A&W Restaurants. Now, Kevin, earlier on, we were just talking about how A&W prides itself for value proposition of quality and affordability. I'm wondering, does the emphasis on quality come with a premium on cost, especially in light of the supply chain issues in Malaysia over the past year, particularly related to chicken? Previously, you were very proud to say that A&W uses fresh chicken that has been in short supply in 2022.
Yes, the chicken market has been, out of all the proteins, has been clearly the most effective, and that's globally. That's globally. So yes, the quality messaging and the quality initiative, quality strategy, does put pressure on margins without a doubt. Certainly in the short term, but we still believe that long term, that quality, that consumer will remember quality long after the price is forgotten. And, you know, A&W, as you mentioned earlier, we've been around, this is our second century. So we've seen these cycles before as a brand. Unfortunately, I have as well, given my tenure in the business over 50 years that I've been in the business. I've seen these cycles. We've seen these cycles. And things, well, it's hard to imagine today, but these things tend to stabilize over over a few years.
Okay, so the strategy,
as we look out over a few years, we think we'll be okay.
The strategy is to ride out this pain, essentially.
100%.
Okay.
100%.
How much of your raw ingredients here in Malaysia are locally sourced versus imported? Can you give us a breakdown in terms of percentages?
I can't give you the exact percentages, but I can tell you that locally is well over 50%. Probably close to two-thirds of our products here are sourced locally.
Okay.
So that is somewhat helpful in that, because it takes out currency fluctuation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the strong U.S. dollar, we try to minimize the products that are brought from the U.S. And then in our development costs, with new development and equipment and whatever, we've sourced products. Sourced items elsewhere other than the U.S., China, for example, and throughout Asia Pacific.
Okay. How is the currency risk hedged, and who does the hedging? You did mention, it is with the strong U.S. dollar that will have an impact. It will import costs does put pressure on the bottom line. So how is hedging carried out?
We do not hedge currency. We do not hedge currency. We have in the past, and generally speaking, we don't have currency exposure concentrated too much in one area. Mm. So we don't do a currency hedge.
Okay. Now, I want to talk about price, because over in the U.S., price value isn't a strategy that you focus on. You said that you're not looking to introduce a dollar menu in U.S. franchises. And you've said that quality is the main value proposition for A&W. But, you just said A&W is participating in Menu Rahma. Is that strategy unavoidable here in Malaysia, where there is stiff competition among the various quick service brands?
It is unavoidable, and it's unavoidable in the U.S. right now as well. But it's not our main strategy. It is, a short-term strategy. Here in Malaysia, here in other markets in Southeast Asia, we have no choice, because our competitors are there. We have to be there.
So it's peer pressure, essentially.
Essentially, yes, it's peer pressure. You need to need to keep transactions. You need to keep that consumer coming to the store. So it's really a two-pronged strategy. It's making the lower price, the price value products available to the consumer that is price sensitive, and at the same time doing the menu engineering to enable us to feature products that are unique to A&W, not necessarily price value, but again, value through the quality and value through the uniqueness of the product. So really a two-pronged strategy.
Okay. Let's talk about your expansion in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So last year you said that A&W intends to double the number of stores to 150 by 2025, with the milestone of the 100th store to be achieved in 2023. How close are we to that target?
Well, we are anticipating getting our 100th store open somewhere in July of this year.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we're at about 90 locations currently, with the plans of the shareholders between Intermark and Pan Malaysia to open consistently 20 locations a year. And they're still on track to do that, including moving into East Malaysia. We opened the first store in East Malaysia earlier this year, with another three or four locations scheduled to open this year in Sabah,
mm-hmm.
and then expanding into Sarawak and Brunei in 2024. So we're well on track to develop and get to the 150 locations by 2025. I think by the end of this year, we should be close to 110 locations. So we do another 20 locations in 24 and 25,
okay.
And we will be there. So
okay.
Shareholders are still committed to doing that, and locations are lining up to make that happen.
So you've said before that quantity of stores is less important than the quality. You don't want to be the biggest player, but you do want to rank in the top three. I find that somewhat contradictory, no? Then, given that store expansion seems to be the driver of growth for A&W Malaysia, you open more stores, hence you grow bigger. Is, you know, opening more stores is still the end goal in that sense?
Well, opening more stores is certainly the end goal, but opening them in the right locations and opening them at volumes that, for example, here in Malaysia, we opened up in Alostar. Mm-hmm. And all-time record sales, high volume, and focusing the and creating a facility that attracts people from a wider geographic area. So, really focusing on in the case of Alostar as an example, a more of a trophy type of a location, flagship sort of a location, as opposed to small little shops around. Perhaps later on with strategy on filling in. But we are finding, not only here, but in other markets as well, is going outside of the city center, going into some of the smaller communities, smaller towns, we tend to do extremely well.
Mm. There's always excitement when a new restaurant opens doors. But sooner or later, the novelty wears off, Kevin. You're banking on pent-up demand in underserved parts of the country like Kedah and East Malaysia. But how sustainable is this, especially with so many new brands coming in? Just the past year, we've seen Taco Bell, Jollibee, hoping for Shake Shack to come in. You know, can A&W still, I guess, attract Malaysian consumers?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, your point is a good one. You have the novelty period. And the pent-up demand. The one thing that we have as a brand, that A&W has as a brand, as you mentioned earlier in this conversation, is really we have been around for over 100 years. We have been in Malaysia now. This is our 60th anniversary. So A&W started in Malaysia in 1963. So 2023 is our 60th anniversary. So we have withstood the test of time. The brand recognition in Malaysia is virtually 100%, right? And so new brands coming in, they're coming in all the time, and it's not just Malaysia everywhere, but they don't necessarily have the brand recognition that A&W has. And then, you know, the uniqueness of the product, the heritage, the memories, all of which we're capitalizing on.
So in Malaysia, you have all those advantages 100%. Of brand recognition. From our last check-in, A&W is still making losses in Malaysia, although this has narrowed somewhat since 2019. When do you expect to be profitable?
I believe A&W Malaysia was profitable in 2022.
Okay.
Record sales and results and bottom line results in 2022. So the investments for the shareholders are starting to pay off. Mm. It's a challenge. It's an ongoing challenge, particularly with the inflationary pressures. It's an ongoing challenge. But as I said earlier, 2022 was a record year. And that was really the critical mass for us in this market, in any market that we enter, is really that 100 locations. Then it becomes really self-sustaining.
Okay. So there's that economies of scale there. Yes. Kevin, in the minute or so that we have you left, where are you casting your eyes in terms of global expansion? Where are the greenfield countries or regions that A&W wants to open their doors in?
Well, we're really looking in two regions right now. One is to get into more of the ASEAN countries. Cambodia, for example, is a market that we are exploring and we have a lot of interest in. But outside of ASEAN, it's really we are looking, have our eyes towards the Gulf in the Middle East, and whether it be Dubai, Kuwait, Qatar. We're talking to Saudi. Talking to several groups that are quite interested in bringing us into the Middle East, which is really supply chain is one of the biggest challenges in going into a new market. And going into the Gulf countries, going to the Middle East, we have all of our halal supply chains lined up because of the business we do here in Malaysia, in Singapore, in Indonesia, all halal markets for us. Mm. So we have the supply chain ready for that. So we think that's a natural for us to get into the Middle
East. Is there a timeline for opening your first A&W store in the Gulf?
Not yet. Early discussions with several different groups.
Okay. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Kevin Basner, Global CEO of A&W Restaurants. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. 5G now with you.
have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.